Just a reminder, today's conference is being recorded.
We are fortunate in this century because of the fact that almost all the saints who have gone by, they are valuable saints in connection with their self-knowledge and God-knowledge. We have all with us. Had we been just come about 100 years back, the saints of Swami Shivdyar Singh, the latest master of India, would not have been in our position. Had we come another 500 years back, the saints of the Sikh saints, Guru Nanak and the others who followed him, would not have been, you know, on our record. And even still further back, say, over 1400 years, we would not have the Quran in our position. Similarly, had we come before 2000 years, the valuable Bible, the holy sayings of the Christ, could not have been in our hands. Still, we go back further, the sayings about 5 or 6 thousand years back, the sayings of the Jainis and the Buddhists would not have been in our hands. So you will see that we are fortunate that almost all these sayings and experiences of those great men who have gone by are now in our hands, and we can refer to them for the subject. In almost all the sayings, scriptures of the holy saints, we find one thing which helps them to contact God, and that is the power of God which is working at the back of all creation and is immanent in every form. They say that to meet God, the first elementary step is to just listen and practice the names of God. All saints who came here, they use certain names for the expression of that almighty power, and that is called generally the Naam or word. Those are all very valuable, more than the diamonds and the jewels. For those who want to tread the path to reality, but the few there are who really understand the expression of Naam or word. There are two kinds of words. One, those with those saints and great ones who came in the past, they used from the various languages to express that reality. There are so many names of the same fruit. It does not matter if we use one name or the other name as expressed by the great ones, but the most important part is we should contact the power with the words expressed. So there are two parts of the thing. One, the word is used to express that God in action power or the reality at the back of all creation. And the other, the named. In this connection, if you want to really understand what love is, if you go through the various saint scriptures, we find that the power that creates the world and the universe is called name and shabda. These are Hindi words meaning musical voice by saints. Vedas like it called in Nad, Rishis call it Akashvani, heavenly melody. Christ calls it word and the name of God. Muhammad call it Kalmaya Lahi, or the voice of Allah. Kalmaya Asmani, voice of heaven. Or is Mehadam the principal factor. Guru Nanak calls it Gurbani, voice of the master and name. But name, truly speaking, is no language. No language has power to emancipate languages, to emancipate. Languages are different for different nations, but the power that emancipates is universal. It is one for the whole universe. It is within Hindus, Mohammedans, Christians, Jews, in short, within every person of any religion. That is what is praised in the holy scriptures of all denominations. The holy Granth, the Vedas, the Shastras, and the holy Quran and the holy Bible, etc. Similarly, Guru Nanak and other saints praise this power. But there are in the books only praises that power itself is not in them. That is within you. It is a very deep thought requiring full attention for its conception. The name that emancipates is an unwritten law and an unspoken language. But our books are in languages. That power is not in any language. Turkish, Arabic, Persian, Sanskrit, etc. Accordingly, that cannot be brought into writing. Therefore, it is better to go to a holy person who has sense within, who analyzes his soul from the body and transcends it. When you initiate you to the path, you should put in your efforts and ascend with it. One law for the whole universe. It is not modern. It is in force since the day of creation. It was never designed by man. The Creator himself designed it. We can neither alter it nor add to it. We have got to ascend through it. Whatever is being explained by the various saints is almost the same. The difference is in the language only, but the purpose and the subject is the same. I am just taking up a hymn of late Swami Shivdayal Singh, as also giving reference to the sayings of other saints to prove that the thoughts were parallel on the subject. But those who remain within ethical codes or religious sectarianism are not being referred to here. I can say we are not anywhere near even the doorway of the philosophy given to us by the saints. All saints who ascended are at the same path. It is a natural science, not artificial. It is within every person. If all of them rightly understood this,
ladies and gentlemen, first of all, I have to just introduce myself to you as a man to a man. God made man, you see, and equal privileges are given to each man, you see. There is no difference between a man and another man. The difference lies only in the fact that a certain man has dwelt in a certain way and he has become an adept in that way. The people who would like to learn that way, he will be competent to just guide them in that particular line in which he has just qualified himself, you see. I had the good fortune to sit at the feet of my master in India, Baba Saman Singh Maharaj, at whose feet I had the good fortune to learn the mystery of life, what it is, and how to solve it. God made man, and man made social religions. Social religions are made for the uplift of man. Man was not made for social religions, mind that. It is the social religions that we are made for man. We had to make the best use of them. Just as Christ said, man is not bound for Sabbath days. Sabbath was made for man, you see. So we have to make the best use of the social religions we are professing. Man is social and is therefore has to follow in sub-social bodies. The purpose of all social religions is to uplift man so as he may know himself and know God. That's the chief aim of all religions. To know God is the goal of all religions. He is the God of all, whether they are theists or atheists, you see. Ever since the world began, the masters have been coming to the world and speaking about God. God cannot be described in words, cannot be, I would say, scaled within the scale of our intellect, finite intellect, you see. But however, whenever these masters who came in the past, they solved the mystery of life, they knew who were they, had the first experience with themselves by self-analysis and came in contact with God. They, whatever experiences they had of the God, naturally they gave out in their holy sayings. And those holy sayings or utterings they made, they form the subject matter of our scriptures. Ever since the world began, the masters have been coming, speaking about God and telling about the various experiences they had while coming in contact with God. So, whenever the masters went away, another master came up just to revive that old science of knowing oneself and knowing God. Old Greeks had that very ideal before them, and they put forth the motto, "Know thyself." That is the first thing to be realized. Unless you know yourself, you cannot know God. Self-knowledge precedes God knowledge. Who we are, what we are. All masters had to say the same thing whenever they came. So all whatever they said, they found the subject matter of so many scriptures now at our hand. Had we come, say, 100 years back, the masters who came in India, within that period, we would not have, before that period, we would not have the scriptures they have left for us. Let us go back still further, and if he had come, say 500 years back, we would not have the holy scriptures of the Sikhs. Still further, if we go back, had you come before 1500 years back, we would not have the Quran of the Prophet Muhammad. Had we come even before 2000 years back, we would not have had this Bible with us. Still further, if we had come before 5 or 6 thousand years, before the valuable records of the Prophet Zoroaster and Lord Buddha would not have been with us. So these all these scriptures taken together are the so many pages of the Book of God that have been written, and there may be many more to be written. Whenever the masters will be coming, you see, they will be explaining all this in their own words, you see. But still, whatever they say, that subject remains still unsaid. Guru Nanak says that some people have come, some prophets, seers, sages, rishis of the old, some just spoke of his almightiness. He is almighty. Some said, well, he remains somewhere in the heavens like that. Others explain that he is immanent in every form. Further, other people said that, well, God resides in every heart. Well, this is one of the very few qualifications of God. God still remains unsaid, you see. Guru Nanak says, if all the masters, seers, sages and rishis who have come in the past, the same number may come more even now and speak of God, you see, continuously, without a break, even then the subject of God will remain unsaid. Because that cannot be brought in words, you see. Suppose, for instance, if you eat a mango, very sweet, you have tasted it, you want to just express it, how will you express it? Tell me. There are no words. You try to give examples, it is sweet like that, it is sweet like that. Maulana Rumi Muhammadan says, when I come in contact with God, I feel sweetness, ineffable, indescribable, just as the honey is just put on the skin. Well, how is you understand, you see? Another saint, Mohammedan, he says, well, Farid, by name, well, when I take the name of God, I feel sweetness. Like, he says, sugar. He says, like the sweet milk of a buffalo, you see? Then he says, no, still for it is just like honey. He says, no, still more, something like that. He gives some examples to show, but still that's how sweet God is, you cannot express. I will give you another example. Suppose you are love somebody. He's your son, your daughter, your wife, your husband. He is very beautiful, very sweet, very attractive, with all that. Are there any words to express that sweetness that you feel? Well, it is not given to words to express the feelings of the heart or the experiences that you have within yourself by coming in contact with God, you see. Those masters who came in the past, they gave some description just to explain, bring home some idea of the great reality supporting, maintaining all creation. And with all that what they have said, still the subject remains unsaid. The masters who came in the past, they said, well, you remember what Walter Whitman said? He said, when I attempt to just say something, speak of something of the reality, he says, I speak, but I cannot. I become a dumb man, you see. How to express? So anyhow, all masters, sages, rishis who came in the past, they are one, that there is some great reality, one truth, which is the cause and supporting of all creation. That creation, creator, is more beautiful than all creation, you see. To see God, to come in contact with God is the highest ideal or the aim of a man's life. First, the scriptures that are at our command, they are the fine records of the first-hand experiences they had with themselves first and then with God. What factors were found as helping factors on the way and what simply retarded their way. So all these things are summed up in the holy sayings of all the masters who came in the past. Though they related those in the language then prevalent when they came, you see. Language is different of all the scriptures. The way they express, they are also peculiar to themselves. But the subject matter that they speak of is the same. So we have respect, the lovers of God have respect for all seers, of all sages, of all masters who came in the past, because they spake as inspired by God. They became the mouthpiece of God. For that reason, because we love God, and they had first an experience of God and God spake to them, that is why we have respect for all masters who came in the past. We have also respect for all the scriptures we have got at our command. at our hands today. We are most fortunate in the 20th century that we have scriptures, all the first-hand experiences of all those masters who came in the past, they had with themselves and with God. Now by their comparative study, we find that they are all one. In just worshipping God, they say there is one God which is our aim in life. The archers may be many, but the target is the same. We may belong to one social religion or the other, but we are all worshippers of God. Well, what the commandments say? Love God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, with all thy mind, and with all thy strength. This is what all other masters said in their own language, in their own scriptures, now with us. And further they say, God resides in every heart, because we love God, and God resides in every heart, we love all humanity, irrespective of the fact whether they belong to one country or the other, one social religion or the other social religion. So when we are worshippers of the same God, we are brothers in faith. Fatherhood of God, by believing fatherhood of God, naturally we believe in the brotherhood of man. So all masters who had to come, they said the same thing. Love thy neighbor as thyself. And Prophet Muhammad said, we are the members of the same family of God. Guru Nanak said, well, he is the only father we have. We have to worship him. So they are all one. These two commandments, you see, if we just live up to these two commandments, there will be peace on earth. When you love a man from the bottom of your heart, can you kill him? Can you steal him, you see, rob him of his wealth? Can you do any harm to him? Not the least. On these two commandments hang on all other commandments. On these two commandments, I've said, hang on all teachings of all masters who came in the past. They're all one. If we but live up to these two commandments, we will bring the kingdom of God on earth. There will be no fear of the atomic age. We are each country dreading now. If it so happens, this war goes, well, there will be destruction of all humanity. There was a grand meeting, conference in Europe some years back, of all scientists, you see. The president stood up and said, we have got control over the forces of nature. Before knowing our own selves and knowing God, that is why all these inventions are being used for the destruction of man. Had we known our own selves and known God, before we found out the laws of nature and made other inventions, all these would have gone for the uplift of man. So this is the social form of the religion that man has to adopt, I say, far as safe journey back home. You see? To live in some social legend is a blessing. It is a blessing. Because otherwise if you are going to revolt, there will be corruption in the world, you see? Social religions are a help, are the preparatory grounds for knowing yourself and knowing God, that the ultimate goal is social religion has got before that, you see? Now the question remains, God made man and his social religion is comprised of men, and God gave equal privileges to all men alike. It is not that one man has got some more concession as compared with the other. All have got two eyes, 2 ears out of formation of the man body is the same, and the inner construction of the man body is the same. And the disease they are suffering, I would say, their souls are under the control of mind. Mind is swayed by the organs of sense, our outgoing faculties. We are identified with the body and the outer environment so much so that we cannot differentiate who we are, what we are. To reach God, to know God, to see God, well, the first step we have to take is to know our own self. For the reason so to know God, you see, the first step that we have to take is to know ourselves first. For the reason that it is the soul that has to realize or see God or know God. Neither the intellect, nor the mind, nor the organs of sense, you see. Unless you know yourself, you cannot know God. That's the point. For that, the Upanishads say that our body should be stilled, our mind should be stilled, our intellect should also be
stilled. Well, good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Satsang for Master Kripal Singh. This morning, our reader is David Halliburton. Are you there, David?
Yes, I am, John.
Okay, carry on.
Thank you. Good morning, everybody. I'm going to be reading this morning from the Master's Talk, published in the December 1970 issue of Sat Sandesh, entitled To Gain His Pleasure. It was republished in 2009, the July-August issue number 4. And I'll be picking up on page 12. Just as we cannot say what God is, so it is impossible to describe the Guru. He has a physical form, but he is not the physical form. If he were, what could he give us? If the whole earth became thin paper, and the seas turned into ink, and all the trees were made into pens, were we to cover the paper with praises to the Lord, we would never succeed in describing his glory. I used to study in a Christian school, and always had an inquisitive nature. I knew that we said, Sri Guru Nanak Dev Ji Maharaj, for in India we attach many respectful terms to the names of masters and certain respected people, and I had noticed that the Christians called their great saint merely Jesus. So I went to a Christian bishop and questioned him, why do you not put a prefix to Christ's name, when even the most insignificant common man is at least referred to as Mr. somebody? The bishop said, and I can still distinctly remember his reply, "We consider Christ the Son of God, and as we cannot glorify God, so we cannot extol Christ. If we start prefixing his name, we will make him smaller, not greater." Another master says, "You are the emperor above all. How can you be praised? Without doubt, there is none equal to the guru. He who starts seeing another as equal to his master, his soul becomes an adulteress. Truly, the light is in everyone, but not manifested as in the guru. When two great souls meet and see the God in each other, that is something different again, something qualified. I remember one incident in Lahore in a house called Pari Mahal, or Fairy Palace, where, at the time, Maharishi Shrivbrat Lalji was staying on a short visit to Lahore. He was the successor to Rai Salagram Ji, who was one of the chief disciples of Swami Ji. When my master was told of his presence in Lahore, he went to see him, and I accompanied the master. It was a very strange sight that I saw. My master, who was always the very depth of humility, was trying to touch his feet, but he wanted to touch Hazur's feet." And now Master is interpreting and expanding on a hymn by Guru Arjan, and there'll be pieces of this throughout the rest of the talk this morning. "His sweetness is above all others, above the sweetness of mother and father. For a child who plays in his mother's lap, she is the sweetest of all beings to him. The true devotee who plays in his master's lap will place that relationship above all others. Sisters, brothers, and all my friends are very close to me, but there is none like you in this world. To the child who plays in his father's lap with no other thought than to try and please him, the father will give whatever he wants. When all other relationships are broken and the guru is the only one in existence, then you have succeeded in your work. On this path, mere words have no value. You must obey his every command. Make your life pure and chaste. Do service unto others. Be careful of evil words. Love everyone as God is in every being. When you serve others, you are serving him. By thy orders, Sawan, or the rainy season, came, and I plowed the furrow of truth." The rain comes in the form of the guru, like a refreshing coolness upon the parched earth. My Hazur's name was Sawan. Like a rain of mercy, they come by God's orders, and we should take full benefit by clearing up the land of our whole being with satsang, where all the dirt and filth is thrown out. We scatter our thoughts abroad, but at satsang we can withdraw toward the truth. All masters encourage this. Christ says, "For where two or three are gathered together in my name, there am I in the midst of them." There will be strong charging there, even if they are thousands of miles from the master's physical form. Guru Gobind Singh says, "Where five disciples sit together, there God will be." How can any good come from a gathering filled with criticisms and disagreements? This satsang was started with my guru's orders. So throw away your laziness and lethargy and become pure. in satsang, the flow of mercy is pouring into you, so get the fullest benefit from it. Weed out all imperfections one by one. That is why I have told you to keep a diary. When the soil is weeded, it is ready for the seed to be sown. Then the true growth can begin. If small pebbles and rocks are not removed, the seed may sprout, but it will not bear fruit. In great aspiration, the seed of Nam was sown. I pray each second for mercy, that it may bear fruit. This seed of Nam, once sown, cannot be set aside by any power. That seed will bear fruit sooner or later. But without the water of satsang, how can the seed be expected to sprout green and fresh in all its beauty? Once sown, it will not die, but in unprepared soil, it will not fructify. He who does not do his meditation in this life will have to come again. As this seed cannot sprout in any other form, he will be given the concession of not retrogressing below the human birth. But why not complete your mission now? He who is unlearned in life cannot become learned merely by going through that change which is called death. No one should be under the misunderstanding that having received the connection with the Holy Nam, he has got salvation. He will get salvation, but in how many lives? When I met the Guru, I knew he was the only one. My heart can never accept another. Once the disciple has recognized his Guru, he can understand only his Guru's teachings and none other. Hanuman, who was Lord Rama's greatest devotee, was once asked what day it was, and he replied, "O Ram." On being asked what month it was, he said, "O Ram." He was so immersed in the sweet remembrance of his beloved that he could think of nothing else. Wherever he looked, he saw Ram, and every person he spoke to was Ram. It is really worth having a guru if you are receptive like this. All the transitory objects have dropped away since I got the company of the saint. At the feet of a true guru, there are no factions, political fights, or religious wranglings. The master simply places a man problem before you. He tells us that when he met his guru, there was nothing else in life. He is one, and yet he is not one. This also is a mystery. He who knows and becomes one with him becomes the doer and the giver. We are devotees of the light. It matters not in which pole it is expressed. All are one and the same. He whose eye is open can see the beautiful play of God's expression. Each man has been allotted the task, but success depends on thy will. The satsang is started by his orders, and he makes the work a success. Hazur used to tell us that when Baba Jaimal Singh Ji gave him orders to start the spiritual work, Hazur went to Baba Garib Das and Chacha Pratap Singh Ji, who both told him, "If we give initiation, the soul might not get salvation, but if you give it, that soul will surely have salvation." When my master gave me orders to do the work, I asked him to whom I should go for such reassurance, and then added that I would do the work as ordered, but that he should give the protection. Hazur assured me that it would be so. With his support, I started the satsang. It is not mine, but his. And he will take everyone across. Whatever blessing he extends is being given out. All credit goes to him. When I went to the West, many people were helped, and I told them that the credit for the blessing went to my master. Forgive me, but so many seekers for truth have spent their whole lives struggling to find it and did not receive even a glimpse of light. Here, everyone gets light. It is another matter if after receiving the gift, they refuse to keep up the practice and thereby lose it. But at initiation, almost all get something, do they not? Those who obey instructions increase their progress daily, 100%. Who is there to place his hand on his heart and declare such assurance? Ashtavakra gave this knowledge to King Janak, and even today people are still repeating his name. How great is the mercy of the Master who gives such an invaluable boon. The age has changed, and so have conditions. If today this experience was not given so easily, no one would come on this path. In the West, many sects have sprung up which deal with suggestion, hypnotism, mesmerism, and other doctrines which are not spirituality. Spirituality is purely a matter of self-analysis, knowing oneself and knowing God, the demonstration of which is given at the time of initiation. Many are doubtful of this science at the beginning, but I tell them to see with their own eyes, for there is no greater proof. In the past, the subject was very vague, for masters agreed to give the experience only after long years of study, when one was fully prepared. Today, it can be seen immediately what spirituality is. What a magnificent blessing. Eat, drink, and be merry. Brothers, this is the Guru's court. He is doling out this gift. You should eat, drink, and enjoy, for you are getting this gift free. There are no charges. Even if you spend all your life in penance, you will not get this thing in that way. Only one man was to be found in King Janak's age who was God-realized. That was Ashtavakra. Today, can you find thousands? In the past, there were few, and even now there are few, but the world is not without them. Make the most of the good fortune. For blessed are they who have received this rare gift. I have become the Lord of this physical form and have tied up the five devils. Masters have no ego. They always acknowledge in humility that everything is achieved with the Guru's grace. Why shouldn't he gain full control over his mind and senses, who has all love for his Guru alone? He says he has become Lord of the house and has captured the five thieves, that is, lust, anger, greed, attachment, and ego. Who can make such a statement? Only with the Guru's strength can anyone declare so boldly. O Satguru, when I came to thy feet, these five strange aliens came under my control. He was pleased, and I was blessed with his grace. Now they cannot revolt or raise their heads. The five senses of action and knowledge are foreign to our nature. They must be overpowered and placed under our orders instead of vice versa. When that happens, they have no courage to stand and defy us, and they will not disobey. Can anyone affirm such a staggering achievement? People say that saints and mahatmas do not assert themselves, but they do speak directly. If they did not give the information of what to get and how to get it, where would we begin to seek for the truth? They tell us that there is such a wonderful nectar inside that will intoxicate the soul. They themselves are intoxicated. Their mind and senses are completely controlled. Their eyes are open, but they do not see. Their ears are open, but they do not hear if they choose not to. They are the controllers of all the senses. With whose power is this achieved? With the grace of their respective gurus. When one gets the Nam's inner nectar, all worldly intoxicants seem ridiculous, and when the seed of Nam sprouts, all outer things become meaningless. All glory and beauty lies within you. You will forget outer things with their false attraction. The five devils will come under perfect control and will have no courage to jeer at you. There is so much nectar within that even they become intoxicated. O Satguru, again and again I glorify thee. With each breath I think of thee. There was a certain intoxicated lover of Bik Sahib who constantly repeated, O Bik, O Bik, for he saw God clearly in his guru. His contemporaries condemned him as an atheist and passed judgment for his execution. But they could not execute him without the king's authorization, so they brought him before the king. It is possible that this king was Akbar the Great, who was renowned for his keen sense of justice. When the king looked at the accused man, he said, I feel he is an intoxicated, holy man. And he asked him, Who is your God? The man replied, Bik. The king then asked, What is your religion? And he said, Bik. At this, the king ordered that he should be released. His accusers protested that he would run away, but the king said, It does not matter. He then looked keenly at the holy man and told him, For a long time we have been without rain, and if it does not come soon, there will be famine in the land. So could you please ask your beak to send the rain? The man replied, Oh yes, I will ask him to send the rain. Only complete faith in the guru could display such calm confidence. He who has not experienced the true inner connection with his guru will not have such strong faith, for faith is built on knowledge. When the holy man turned to leave, the king asked him when he would return, and he answered, On the third day I will return. The very next day there was such a heavy downpour of rain that the whole countryside was flooded, and on the third day the holy man returned to the king's palace. The king smiled at him and said, Your guru was very gracious to us in sending the much needed rain. I am giving you these precious gifts. Please place them before your Bik Sahib as my thankful offering. The devotee got very indignant, saying, These perishable things for my guru? Most decidedly not. Such people care nothing for the world and its possessions. You have brought life to this derelict house, or the body. I could sacrifice myself in gratitude. Gratitude is a very rare virtue. Because of friends and relatives, we even risk our guru's displeasure, and this is due to lack of gratitude and faith. We sometimes consider the guru to be less able than an ordinary man. With this type of outlook, what can we hope to achieve in progress? The worldly things are more beloved. Guru and God are accepted casually for whatever can be derived through them materially. The attitude is one of tolerant duty, with respects paid in a condescending manner. Man always thinks he is the greatest of all, but if he really became great, he would not be in this blind, egoistic state. I am in perpetual dhyan, or contemplation, with my beloved. The fruit comes to him whose attention pierces through the veil. If you completely surrender unto him, then nature itself will be at your beck and call, and all your desires will be fulfilled. Guru Amar Das Ji says, O mind, you once desired 1,000 things, but did not get one. Now see that each thought will be fulfilled. The hymn continues, all the work has been resolved, and the mind's hunger satisfied. What else can I desire from you but you? All else is misery upon misery. Give the Nam, which renders all fulfilled and takes away the hunger of the mind. I have abandoned everything and am a true servant of the Lord. He who surrenders to the Lord lives without worries, doing the work sincerely and truthfully, and leaving all else to the Guru. That Nam, giver of all happiness, has been tied to me. Nam is the sustainer of all things. He who has Nam has got everything. During one of my visits to America, An intimate meeting was arranged with a group of scientists. One man asked many questions and obviously strongly doubted the subject of spirituality. After some discussion, I asked him if science had succeeded in creating even 1 ounce of consciousness. He said, no. I then explained to him that the pursuit of science must necessarily remain in the domain of matter, whereas all the teachings and knowledge of the saints lie in the domain of consciousness. There were a number of disciples present at this meeting, and they were of the opinion that this gentleman would not turn up on the morrow, which was chosen for the initiation program. But he was the first to arrive, and he got the most experience. So this is a path of awareness, the path of perfect masters, and you may accept it as their mercy or due to their greatness that they have made such a difficult achievement into a child's play. Were it not for this fact, the seeker would require a great background of past lives and then many years of study and preparation for this path. So, Guru Arjan Sahib advises us to eat, drink, and enjoy what we have got, for this is the precious time, and the rain may not fall forever. I am the most content of all. The Guru has established the Shabd within me. He is encouraging us to have some longing for a thing of which we have no conception of the value. All the wealth is lying in the disciple's father's home. And for whom is it but his own child? The most obedient child will naturally receive the most. Whatever the Guru has got, he considers not his own, and the more he gives freely, the greater the flow. Eat, drink, and enjoy to the fullest while you have the opportunity. Satguru, the Lord, placed his hand on my head and manifested God within me. His greatness is proven when he actually shows the way, even without the physical gesture of placing the hand on the head. By his grace alone do we rise above body consciousness and see the light within. He is the giver, comparable to none other. I have opened a true Dharamshala, and have gathered the true seekers there. A dharamsala is in India a common place of rest for travelers, erected in the name of righteousness. A blind man cannot seek one with sight, but one who can see can gather the blind together. Christ told us of the sheep he had to find and take care of. Man is helpless with merely his own efforts to assist him. Sincere seekers will find that all will be arranged and made possible without them doing anything. Even before I arrived in America, there were people who knew nothing about me who were seeing the Master's form and also Baba Sawan Singh Ji within. When they saw me physically, they told me that they had been seeing me within for months, and some for a year or more. Brothers, it is all His work, not mine. During my first world tour, on the way back to India, I agreed to pay an unarranged, impromptu visit to Germany. Someone who was accompanying me remarked, "But how will those people recognize you, for they have never seen you? In the other countries, at least, the program was prepared. Even if they recognize you by your clothes, how will you know them?" I replied, "He who is sending me there will make all the arrangements. Why should I worry? He will himself arrange all to receive me." When the plane landed in Germany, there was a small crowd awaiting me, and each person had a rose in his hand. I said, "You see, there is my reception." They came running toward us, asking about the luggage and telling us that the cars were ready and waiting. So he himself does his own work. The commission comes from the Lord, and he works through whomsoever he chooses, be it one or thousands. I wash his feet and fan him. Again and again I express my thankfulness for finding him. A true guru never says he is a guru, but in all humility will serve whoever goes to him, for he comes to serve humanity and to give something to the world. When he comes, the entire world gets the benefit of his light. The reading will stop there, and I'll just say thank you, Master, for this opportunity to sit together in your holy name. Amen.
Thank you, David, for the wonderful reading. Today we had 79 people at the satsang. Thank you, everybody, for attending. And thank you, Master, for providing this for us. Now please hang up your phone.